And I will just remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're going to roll right in to our weekly political roundup. Former President Donald Trump has made scores of headlines over the years, months, this week for the things he said on the campaign trail and in office. But the latest controversy he's been caught up in, well, I guess it's not even the latest anymore, but one that made news this week is not because of something he said. Instead, it was a stand-up comic, Tony Hinchcliffe, something he said at a Trump rally at Madison Square Garden in New York City.
I don't know if you guys know this, but there's literally a floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean right now. Yeah. I think it's called Puerto Rico.
Later in the week, President Joe Biden offered up reaction to those remarks. And for all the inflammatory remarks that have come from former President Trump this election, Biden's comments set off their own controversy.
They're good, decent, honorable people. The only garbage I see floating out there is his supporters.
Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., Vice President Kamala Harris delivered her closing argument in her campaign for the presidency. We begin today, as we often do, with Washington correspondent Linda Kenyon. Linda, happy last Friday before Election Day. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, blissfully, it's almost over, right?
I don't think it is. I think we're going to...
It's over. Election Day is almost
right
here. We worry about what comes next.
And I am worried about that. So I want to spend some time on the Puerto Rico remarks, but as so often happens these days, we've been overtaken by events. Trump made another of his comments employing violent imagery about his political opponents, talking about Liz Cheney, the former Republican congresswoman turned Trump opponent, has said, he said, quote, "She's a radical war hawk. Let's put her with a rifle standing there with nine barrels shooting at her. Okay, let's see how she feels about it, you know, when the guns are trained to her face," end quote. Trump was at a campaign event in Arizona with former Fox News host Tucker Carlson. Linda, what do you make of these comments? What are you hearing in terms of reaction?
Well, there is a lot of blowback on that one as well. Liz Cheney herself says it's akin to a death threat. And she released a statement on Twitter, also X, known as X. And she said, and I'm going to read it to you, "This is how dictators destroy free nations." She says they threaten those who speak against them with death. Now, it's very interesting that throughout the campaign, former President Trump has accused Harris and Democratic supporters of saying things that have encouraged violent threats, basically saying that the assassination attempts against him were partially due to some of the rhetoric on the Democratic side of the aisle. But yet, he comes out with this statement about a firing squad. And
also, to be clear, is there any evidence that the two people who shot at, or one who shot at and the other who was waiting in the bushes at his golf club, was there any evidence of sort of Democratic or liberal political motivations?
There is no evidence at all. However, in a campaign, many things are said.
Many things are said indeed. And I guess we should note that Trump has repeatedly vowed to investigate or prosecute his political rivals, including Cheney, as well as election workers, journalists, left-wing Americans, among others. He even said the military could be used against what he calls, quote, radical left lunatics if there is unrest on Election Day. And Liz Cheney mentioned the idea of the dictator or this sort of slide into authoritarianism. There was something else that happened this week, and we need to take a break in a couple of minutes, but you know, I'm going to put a pin in that, actually. Let's talk about Puerto Rico briefly, because, gosh, that feels like it was a month ago at this point. But this wasn't even something that Trump said. It was something one of his he had a roast comedian who was one of the warm-up speakers. What sort of response have you heard to that in Washington?
Tremendous, tremendous backlash from that. Puerto Rican Americans can vote living in the contiguous United States. Latinos have often supported Republican candidates. This has been very, very damaging to Donald Trump and to the Republican Party, who have courted the Latino and Puerto Rico vote for quite some time. So we're going to continue to see some backlash. The comments about garbage has been very offensive to a lot of Latino voters. And you know, this is something that is going to continue. In fact, there's a new Harris ad right now that came out in the battleground states targeting Latino and Puerto Rican voters, saying Somos Mas, and basically we are all Puerto Ricans today. We have also some very high profile Puerto Rican celebrities. Jennifer Lopez, born in the United States, her parents are from Puerto Rico. She's very offended about this, and so if she's very offended about this, she is talking about it, and that is just some of the backlash we've been seeing.
Yeah. All right. We're going to continue our conversation with Linda Kenyon. If you want to join us briefly, we're moving quickly today, 800-222-9455. I do want to mention, I read a paragraph there about Trump's past comments about investigating or prosecuting his political rivals. I was pulling that from a Reuters article, that litany. So I just want to be sure to credit where credit is due there. So we will continue this conversation after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are continuing our Friday political roundup with Linda Kenyon, Washington correspondent for Illinois Public Media. Linda, before the break, we were talking about Trump's comments, violent imagery, and his discussion of Liz Cheney this morning, saying that, you know, let's put her with a rifle, standing there with nine barrels shooting at her. Let's see how she feels about it when the guns are trained to her face. And Cheney responded to that by talking about how this is how dictators and, you know, talk about or sort of go after their opponents. And on this idea of this, you know, slide into an authoritarian style of government in America, at the risk of overstating things, I don't know. I want to talk about this. There was this decision this week from Jeff Bezos, the head of Amazon Blue Origin, a space flight company. And he was also the owner of the Washington Post, and he had the Post strike an editorial that would have endorsed Harris. Now, I got to say, I was initially not that fazed by this because I really don't think newspapers should be in the business of making endorsements, especially in high-profile races, and I really don't think they make that much of a difference anymore. But I have been persuaded now that this is a more significant and ominous development because we learned that the decision came after Bezos's Blue Origin space company, which, you know, space companies need government contracts, had met with Trump. So there is a way of seeing this as an act of what political scientists call anticipatory obedience on the part of our sort of billionaire class. We've also seen Elon Musk endorsing and going all in for Trump. And even people like Warren Buffett, who endorsed Obama in 2008 and Hillary Clinton in 2016, has chosen to sit out this election. I'm not sure I even really have a question here. I'm just wondering how you are thinking about all this and what you're hearing from people in Washington about this decision.
I have talked to a lot of people in Washington about this, and a lot of them are outraged. They feel that it is censorship, that it sets a bad precedent, that it stomps on freedom of the press. And I will also say that upwards of 200,000 subscribers have canceled their subscriptions to the Washington Post because of this act by Jeff Bezos. Now, some people are saying that, look, you know, you're not hurting anybody but the journalists if you call off your subscription. And that is the wrong way to express your displeasure with Jeff Bezos and this decision. But there is also the flip side of that argument I've also heard, which is Jeff Bezos, with all of his billions, can afford to pay all of those journalist salaries and then some without saying, oh my gosh, I lost 200,000 subscriptions. He doesn't depend on the subscriptions. In fact, there was a lot of discussion about maybe making the Washington Post an endowment and therefore not susceptible to market forces. But, you know, why did Bezos do this? Well, we do have to discuss market forces. Was this a clear, cold business decision? as opposed to a decision about the First Amendment. And there are market forces at work. He is, in fact, a businessman. So journalism itself has suffered because of the influence of corporate profits. So yes, with each passing day, the those of us who work in the field feel like an endangered species. This did not help.
We've come a long way from Kitty Graham taking on the entire Washington government in her time. I do want to make time for on the subject of Trump. There was yet another woman who came forward this week, Beatrice Kuhl, saying Donald Trump touched her in a way that was sexual and unwanted, allegedly in 1993. Story was in the Daily Mail. I believe this is the 28th person to come forward with an allegation, somewhere on the spectrum from unwanted touching to sexual assault. Can you remind us of this extraordinary litany of women who have leveled these charges against Trump?
Yeah, 28 women now, two in this election cycle. Beatrice Kuhl, a former pageant queen, says that Trump acted in sexual misconduct against her in a private meeting when she was invited to attend the Trump American Dream pageant. We had also this week, we had number 27 to accuse him, a former model, Stacey Williams. She said that he began groping and sexually touching her in 1993 in what she believed, she said, was a twisted game between him and Jeffrey Epstein. She apparently, who was a model in the 1990s and met Trump through Jeffrey Epstein. They walked to the Trump Tower and he started, according to the allegations, to grope her. And then let's not forget E. Jean Carroll. She won a $5 million judgment against Donald Trump because of her claims that he sexually abused her in a department store dressing room. I will also be pointing out that Trump and the Trump campaign have denied all of these allegations. But it is hard to close your eyes and ears to the fact that he was caught on video at one of the evening entertainment magazine shows with Billy Bush, where he talked about grabbing women by the you-know-what, and he said that when you're a celebrity, you get to do that. You just can do whatever you want. And considers himself a celebrity long before he was, a presidential candidate, and feels that he can do what he has done. And at the same time says, I didn't do any of it.
All right. Really briefly, Linda, you know, we began with noting that Election Day is about here. Vice President Harris says she's going to be, quote, sadly ready if Trump declares victory before the votes are counted. He and his allies have been methodically preparing supporters to think the only way Harris can win is if the Democrats cheat. How are you preparing for this?
Well, I am going to be working, of course, all night on election night, and I am not expecting to have the results. Probably not on election night. We'll have trends, but we will not have actual vote totals. So, of course, there is the exit polling. We can't talk about exit polling on the air until the polls are closed in a particular state. And so we are planning for all night coverage and perhaps several days thereafter. And the lawsuits are already shaping up. We do know that the Trump campaign has positioned hundreds of lawyers to challenge the results of the election. And the Harris campaign is pre-positioning hundreds of lawyers to deal with election night challenges and then beyond.
Linda Kenyon, good luck to you. Stay safe. And look forward to continuing to talk with you as this election season continues past Election Day.
Thank you.
All right. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we end today, as your ballot often does, with a discussion and questions about judges. There they are. Maybe you forgot they were going to be there, but you got to make a decision now. How are you going to do that? One of the groups out there that is trying to help people make more informed and better decisions about judicial elections is Injustice Watch. It's a nonpartisan, nonprofit journalism organization. It has meticulously researched a guide to candidates for judicial elections this year. their focus is on Cook County, but there's a lot to take away from the guide and the work that went into it, no matter where you are in Illinois. So here to talk with us about that is Carlos Ballesteros, a reporter for Injustice Watch. Carlos, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about this guide to judicial elections. A lot of our listeners are downstate, but what research goes into compiling this guide? What are the things that you're looking into that voters might want to know about as they make their decision for judge on the ballot?
So to make our judicial election guide, our team of investigative journalists, we're about like 10 in total, delved deeply into every of the judges on Cook County and on the Cook County ballot. And by that, we mean we go into their decisions as judges and also their reversals as judges. So decisions that they've made that have been reversed by the appeal court, by the appellate court. We also look into their residency status, specifically in Illinois. The state law mandates that judges live in the district in which they serve. And so we check to see if that's true for all the judges on Cook County ballots. And we also look into any past political connections they might have had and any controversies they might have been a part of. So it's a really extensive, substantive process that we hope fills the information gap for voters, because as you know, judges make up a huge portion of people's ballots. In fact, in Cook County, there are more than 70 judges on the ballot for this election. That's easily by far the largest section of anyone's ballot. But the amount of information out there about these judges is very scant. So we're hoping to fill that gap with our election guide.
Yeah, I've never had the pleasure or lack of pleasure of having to vote in Cook County. I've always lived outside Cook, so I've never had that experience of the bedsheet ballot that was a specific historic example. Anyway, I digress. So, okay, outside of Cook County, a big resource for judicial elections are recommendations from bar associations on who to keep, mm-hmm. who to get rid of. Talk about how they make those decisions and whether that information factors into the work that you all do.
Yeah, absolutely. So the bar associations, which are groups of lawyers, essentially, and there are plenty of bar associations,
the big ones, the Illinois State Bar Association, but then there are smaller right. identity or affinity group bar associations, LGBT, Black, etc. Yeah, go on.
Exactly right. And so each election, these bar associations release their own reviews on these judges. And you know, like in Justice Watch, we don't tell you how to vote. We're nonpartisan. We just bring the information to you. But the bar associations do make recommendations for voters as to how to fill out that section of their ballot. And so the process for them differs from bar association to bar association, but in general, they essentially do a lot of court watching and interviewing lawyers who practice before each judge. And they also sometimes interview the judge themselves about their practice and ideology and their approach to the law. And once those bar associations' reviews and recommendations get released, we put them in our guide as well, online specifically. Because this year we printed 150,000 print copies of the guide, but we printed them before the bar associations' reviews were in. But online on our website, injusticewatch.org, every judge will have the Bar Association's reviews and recommendations in their profiles. And so we compile all of them and make it easy for voters to see what the Bar Association said.
And I think people can probably, if they just want to Google Bar Association and their county name, they can probably find some more local information for themselves. Last thing I want to ask you about, because I think this can be confusing to people, especially newer voters. What is the difference between a judicial election and a retention election? And we'll have to be brief about this. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Essentially, the retention elections are the elections that currently sitting judges face. So basically, it's a yes, no on the judge. It's a yes or no question for each of the judges that are up for retention. And so voters are basically deciding whether or not to keep this particular judge on the bench, rather than having someone else run for that seat. It's not the same as like a congressional race or something like that. It is the judge running against their own record and the public getting to decide, yes or no, do we keep this judge on the bench? There are some open seats this election in the judiciary, particularly around sub-circuits in Cook County. And those are contested, and so you will have a Republican and a Democrat facing off to get appointed for that seat on the bench. But the vast majority of judges on the ballot are under the retention election. That's a yes or no for each of them.
Yeah, you're elected partisan the first time, and then 6 years later for trial judges, 10 years later for appellate and Supreme Court judges, you go, shall this judge be retained? I think it's a 60% of people voting on the question in order to retain, if I'm correct
yes,
about that.
That's right. They have to obtain 60% yes vote to stay on the bench. If they don't, they get voted out.
All right. Well, and we didn't talk about the Illinois Supreme Court races this year because, frankly, they're unopposed. There were two huge races last time, lots of money. No one coming forward to challenge this year, so not much excitement there. Carlos Ballesteros, reporter with Injustice Watch. It was short, but I appreciate all the time and effort you and your colleagues put into this report and sharing it with us today.
Thank you, Brian, and we appreciate you. And get out there and vote, for sure. Use our guide.
All right. Injustice Watch, if people want to look that up, just Google that. And that is all the time we have for our show today. The 21st Show is produced by Anna Casey, Christine Hatfield, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. And today, Jerry Moorfield. Thank you, Jerry. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We will talk with you again on Monday.